Thank you. Well, here we approach the next to the last lecture of the thing. Let me tell you something. We'd probably go on for days. I'd probably tell you all about this Gold's problem, Mass. By the time we finally finished up, you'd probably all be OT or something. Or totally plowed in. Who knows? Which one? Let me tell you that the running of 3D is interesting. Fascinating. And excruciating. We don't pull any punches on this. There's no particular reason for you to believe that processing has suddenly become very easy. It is not. As you step up the velocity on the overwhelm of the mind, it's aberrations, you get the reactive mind, you start overwhelming this thing. You're going up against every fighting valence that you've ever had, every apathetic one, and every one that hurt like L. You fortunately, however, don't run them out pain by pain. In Dianetics, 1950, you ran it out pain by pain. Scientology, 1962, you run it out scream by scream. Frankly, you won't be able to take it. Be too much for you. It's almost that too much for me. I used to be able to as-is engrams by inspection. First time I tried that with a valence, it spit back. It's fascinating. Do you know that no command or process that we have had over these many years, phases of 3D Gold's problem mass, except 3D processes. You might as well just skip running anything else but the exact process that is prescribed for 3D. I spent 2 weeks going over the processes we had had over a decade, trying to take them apart and find out which one worked. There's only one series ever worked on 3D. And that is using the pre-have scale as solutions to problems. The Gold's problem mass is a series of problems. The valences are there as solutions to problems. And problems alone take apart this lot. Now, there are many ways you can take apart a problem. There are many ways you could go into this. There are many ways the situation could be ameliorated, alleviated, and your life could be made easier. The first and foremost way to have life made easier for you is to have an expert auditor. That is something that you really should have. You deserve that. I'm trying like crazy to give you that. Like men, I'm succeeding very, very well. I'm very proud of the auditors we are turning out these days. Very proud of them. And don't let it make you feel that all of those years of training is wasted. Let me tell you, we take somebody who was trained yesterday, and we try to teach him how to do this sort of thing, and he just hasn't got the background necessary to resolve the case. It takes you, with all of your fits and starts and fallings on your head, and seeing which way it's wrong, and the experiential pattern of the past background, and knowing how many mistakes you can make, and knowing how screwy PCs can get, and knowing that all cases are rough cases. Knowing practically everything that you know makes it very much easier to take apart the things that we are taking apart. Although 3D is a very finite activity, it is a very precise activity, and though it apparently could be learned by anybody who could hold an E-meter balanced neatly upon their map, who knows what they would do if anything went wrong? They wouldn't understand any part of what was going on. They really wouldn't. So don't despair over the great amount of training you have had, which you don't need now. Let me tell you something. One thing alone stood in the road of your ability to audit. One thing alone. Not you. Oh, people audit a lot better when they get a 3D run and that sort of thing. But we're clearing a world with auditors who aren't cleared. Do you realize that we couldn't clear a world with auditors who were clear? Not because clear auditors couldn't audit, but who would ever clear the clear auditors so that they could clear people? You never get anybody clear, isn't that right? If everybody had to wait until all the auditors were clear, I've had various schemes proposed to me, such as, let's all knock off and not do any more auditing, and then you clear one person and then teach him how to audit, and then he will clear two people and teach them how to audit, and each one of them will clear two people and teach them how to audit, and then they clear them, and I think German General Staff, circa 1914, is called a schema. Here it is. Spelled schema, pronounced schema. It's idiotic progression. Go ahead and get a subjective reality on auditing after it's all been run out. Go ahead and try. You won't know what it's all about. If you were perfectly audited and there was absolutely never a flub on the line, there was nothing ever went wrong, it just all went out very smoothly, you'd say, how easy this is, and then you would learn how to audit, and you go through the academy, and everything is very fine, you learn everything very fast, you get to learn bulletins, and there's nothing to that, and you say, well, Emir, don't know why anybody had any trouble with that. You get all that, and it's all set, and everything's fine, and you say, this meter, oh, this marvelous meter, yes, and it's on, so it's very easy, and you sit down, and you're all set to do an assessment, and so forth, and the PC has a dirty needle. Scratchy needle, the students at St. Hill are calling them. It goes. You say cats, rats, kings, and coal heavers. It doesn't matter what you say, the needle goes. You say, mother-in-law. No reaction. You can't find any reaction on the needle of any kind whatsoever except. I think about that time you'd say, well, a textbook is wrong, and let's find a PC that's much easier. So you got to find a PC as much easier, and you get started with the assessment. You just go and find, you've got all the goals, and you found the PC's goal rather easily, and you found the opposition terminal rather easily, and you found the opposition goal rather easily, and you found the modifier, and the needle goes, and they say, Ron said, all you have to do is repeat the modifier to the PC several times, and the needle would start to read, and the whole package start to read, that's good. You say, jump, that's the modifier, jump, jump. Jump, jump. You say, well, that PC, something wrong with that, doesn't follow the textbook, see? So let's find another PC. What? What was the matter? Well, you see, the fella couldn't remember anything, and he came in to get audited. He came in to get audited so that he could remember where his door key is because he's been locked out for several weeks. Came in to get audited. He has troubles. He's not interested in who he was last life. He's trying to find out who he is this life. There's some old-time auditor taking a look at this. Say, what do you know? I wonder what this is all about. Okay. Said the PC. What you do? What you been doing? What's going on? What's going on? Oh, nothing. Yeah, well, what's it look like? Well, it's about that long, about that wide. Now, you've done it the mat, and it's not there anymore. And, you know, factually, I'm not kidding, you know. Anybody that hadn't been over the jumps to any degree at all, I can tell you how auditors would be trained in the future. They'd be trained by starting them in on book one, having audit engrams. Probably take us 10 years to train them. Our postgraduate course will be this Congress. These poor people that came up because Ron always gives something simpler in a PE, you know what I mean? I'm having a ball, this Congress. I'm sorry, folks, really. You come in July, and I'll make several lectures, even more incomprehensible. The point is that you wouldn't know what the ramifications or limits of the mind were. How wrong could the mind go? I can just see somebody starting to run a 3D who knows nothing about past tragedy, and all of a sudden says, hey, I can see it now. I get a telex. Telex comes out of the machine, you know, and the paper keeps coming out of the machine and climbing up the wall, you know. We're terribly worried. We had this pre-clear, and he saw a picture. And the picture was himself as an executioner. And we've been trying to run this picture so that we could get on with it, and all we get to register on the whole thing is an executioner, but he claims it isn't his valence. And we can't get executioner to register on the thing, and the case is all balled up, and we don't know what we're doing. And I would send him back a nice understanding telex. I can always be counted on to do this sort of thing. And I would say, I agree with you completely. You don't know what you're doing. See, that as is the situation. Every once in a while, somebody calls upon me to do a complete education on the subject of Scientology in one short letter. Okay. And that would be very easy. It isn't that these things are important, but these things exist. And a person who has never seen that these things exist, a person that hasn't a clue that they exist, will keep running into them, and he would find himself called upon to go back over the whole thing anyhow. And it would all look like strange worlds to him. They'd have these great big trees in it with these branches that looked like they were coming down, see? And all of these paths that go through, and every once in a while, wolves jump out with these night bonnets on. And they pick up this thing about Freud because that's all true, too. And then they get everybody running out their desires for eating sausages or something, you see. And then they decide that, well, actually the best thing to do is sit down and contemplate your navel. And there goes Scientology. Don't you see what would happen? Do you realize there are a lot of phenomena in the mind? There's a lot of things. There's a lot of gimmicks. There's a lot of whatnots. There's a lot of buttons. There's fantastic numbers of things. Some valence you've got right this minute, parked with those 800,000 other valences latched on top of it that wouldn't even assess out. Some valence that you have never dramatized, you would pay no attention to, that has never bothered you at all, has more aberration cooked up in it. More aberration and twist-a-rulus in it. This is something you wouldn't even handle than Freud ever met. That's right. Just one of these little valences. All this came about, by the way, by an understanding of this one fact. You know these profiles they've been having you do? You know, you go in and you find out if you're still abreacting your hostilities, you know? You write down, you fill out all these forms. You know what you're testing? You're testing what valence you're in. Because the resulting graph is a picture of the personality of a valence. Now, you can change that valence. That's possible. And so you get a change of graph by changing the valence. That's possible. But there's something much more possible about the thing that you would be far more interested in. How about changing the valence? We audit the person, we change the valence. Well, do you realize that your big graph changes? Your big graph changes all stem for having run out a valence in which the PC was in. That was giving him a lot of trouble. And there it went with its somatic packages and everything else. He didn't necessarily get another valence right on top of it as seriously as that. But you're sort of potluck. What valence picture are you running out? All right, we've got one way up here at the top of the scale. That's way up here, you know. You get up and you look up like this to find this valence, you know. Serene, sweet, full responsibility, critical, never. There it is, you know. It had gone up higher, except you ran out of paper. You say, boy, how ideal that is. See, how marvelous that is. That valence folds up. You have to get over and get inside the lines on the graph paper, you know. And you look down there, and way down there someplace, way down there, it says, too vicious. No responsibility. Always loses. Can't have nothing. Trying to find it on this critical scale here. Says there's no use damning them, damn them. You say, well, I sure ruined that PC. No, you sure ruined this valence. This valence was the escape valence. That is the, that's not a technical term. It's just what the person became, see? After they were the head sacrificial priest, you see. That's this bottom valence, you see. And when they finally got absolutely convinced at that time that they just couldn't stand their arthritis in the hand, you know, the arthritis pains in the hand. Every time they picked up the sacrificial knife, you know, these arthritis pains, they go on, you know, and they just couldn't stand this anymore. And so forth, and they slitting the blood of the victim and all of that sort of thing, you know, slitting his throat and all of that kind of thing. And they were just getting to a point where hands too shaky, you know, arthritic and shaky. They couldn't stand that anymore, see? So they couldn't hold the post anymore. So they took the next best thing, see, which is the left ear of the starboard incense pot. And boy, is that incense pot serene. It's being fully responsible. But it never does nothing, but it never criticizes a thing. And of course, the incense pot turns around, comes in at the bottom, and you find yourself with a priest on your hands. Well, in 3D, it goes this way. Well, that you did that in ordinary auditing. It wasn't until the fellow picked up the next somatics of the valence. Nothing crude as that. In 3D, this is what happens. You get the thing all packaged out. You find your PC up here at the top, and you're running this very nicely, and everything is fine. And all of a sudden, after you've been it for a long time, why, you come on at the bottom, and the PC has never had arthritis in this lifetime. And the PC wakes up in the morning with full-blown arthritis and tries to eat breakfast, you see? They put down their fork and their knife. And they say, come on, I better get hold of myself here. I better get hold of myself here. And they decide they don't want any breakfast, and they phone you and they say, and you expect a complaint, but they say, "I feel awful." Boy, have I got horrible somatics. Guy's been living all of his life, you know, in a vacuum, you know, no feeling. He lights a cigarette, forgets to put out the match, you see, and about the time his finger burns away up to the second joint, he notices it. It's a big change to this guy to be able to put his hand down on a pin and hurt, see, or to feel any pains in his fingers at all. It's marvelous to behold. Well, he just gets used to these somatics as a priest, and he's accustoming himself to these things. You see, he gets maybe a whole session or three or four sessions, or maybe if you're going slow and got the rudiments out and you should have studied a little harder, 8, 10, 12 sessions, he's got these somatics, you see, and he's still going, you know, I like this a little bit. And he said, look at, you know, this is interesting, you know, that's a priest. You know, if I do that, pick up the knife, you know, and cut people's throat. Just get used to this, see? He gets so he can live with this thing. And he's lighting a cigarette one day. I wonder if that would burn. Suppose that would burn? I wonder if this would burn. You go back, you can't find this valance anymore. You got the next valance. It's a temple burner downer. And of course, the lower harmonic of a temple burner downer would, of course, be an incense pot of being burned down all the time, wouldn't it? Well, it doesn't go quite according to that plan or anywhere near that evenly. But I put it in that guise just to give you an idea of what it is. These things upgrade and downgrade, and they do all sorts of weird things. And if you had to run out every single one of these valences, why, we would just never get around to it. Actually, there are only 4, 5, 6 packages that have any real bearing on the case. And these packages are all of them handleable to greater or lesser degree. They are all handleable with fantastic somatics. Don't kid yourself. But the triumph, some fellow says, man, I thought I'd had somatics before, but the back of my head is absolutely coming off. Yes, sir. Sort of, you know, a certain pride in the matter. Bet the back of your head never came off like that, you know. You want to see the back of my head? I'll take it off and show it to you. Right back there, that's a hoplite. You know what a hoplite is? You know what a hoplite is? A hoplite is a Greek soldier. And they have discai. You know, they keep throwing the... You know, in the Olympic Games, they have these discai. You know, you've seen these discai. Actually, that was a war weapon, this guy will tell you. See, it was a war weapon. And you took them like this. You know, they went like this. And finally... See? Bang! These tin helmets. They really were made out of tin. How do you smack you? I'm sure that's what that is. I'm sure that's what that is. That's pretty close approximation to what that is. Anyhow, we're running a hoplite. That's what we're running today. Yeah. Us. Greaves, you know, so forth. Chest plate. You feel it now, as a matter of fact. You know what happens to you when you get cold with a metal chest plate on? Guy's quite an authority on this subject. About the time he's really a good authority on this subject, and he really knows all about it, why, it's gone. It's gone. Mysteriously non sequitur, why, you're now running a court lady. He says, have you got any ideas as how you're supposed to act in court? Supposed to act in court. Any idea of the deportment of a court lady? Any idea at all? There's 17 ways you back away from a throne. Did you realize that? All of them dangerous. Well, now, if it were just pictures of valences that we were interested in and characteristics of valences and so forth, it might be rather dull. But that isn't what we're interested in at all. Every one of these valences is in a fight. It's again things that are again it. The PC's attention is never on the single beingness of it all. As a matter of fact, the beingness of it all is very junior to the doingness. And the doingness of it is absolutely fantastic. The doingness of it, what it is doing it to, and so forth. And for the first few runs of the thing, why, the opposition terminals are rather vague. Well, they're over there, and we don't have much to do with them, and so forth, and then we finally run into a full-blown collision with these things. But the point is, the warfare of life is represented in these problems, and every one of these beingnesses is part of a problem. And the only reason it's suspended in time is the beingness is there, still charging flat out toward the opposition beingness. You have the willow wand and the wind. There's a willow wand, and it's leaning hard up against the wind. And there's the wind, and it's blowing hard against the willow wand. There's the water buck and the tiger, and the tiger versus the water buck. These are the packages, and they're called packages because the single valences could not exist unless they were suspended in time against other valences. And that is the whole trick. The reason they are suspended is because there is another valence. It is a two-terminal universe. And the reason why you are baffled is while you are busy being a hoplite, you keep adjusting your hair and backing away from thrones. And no hoplite would do that quite that way. You're never quite satisfied if you're looking at it from a life point of view. Every time you think of being a soldier, you fix your hair. Well, you could rationalize that out, and you can figure it all out. Well, of course, a soldier wouldn't fix his hair. And let's see, in a battle, it's long bad thing to have long hair, because enemy soldiers can grab you by the hair and pull your hair out and slit your throat and so forth. So it's a bad thing to have hair, and I guess that is why I'm always concerned about hair. Actually, all the time he was a hoplite, he was very worried about his hair. He didn't have any. Shaved head. Because the flavor of the opposition terminal to the hoplite, a court lady, this was the war which was going on between the valences. Those characteristics are impressed across. And if you got him into the valence of a court lady, which you could very easily flip him into, you see, why, this court lady is always fixated about fixing up her breastplates. See? Always hitching up her breastplates. And you call to her attention, now listen, a girdle is slightly higher than that. That should be up here. She keeps more or less hooking up her pants, you see. And that's her breastplate. It's confused. It's a real interesting hurdy-gurdy. The water buck, he'll tell you when you first find him as a water buck, you'll say, well, now, see, the package is water buck and tiger. And when you first find him as a water buck, he'll tell you, well, I was a different kind of water buck, actually. I wasn't an average run-of-the-mill water buck like those other water bucks. I was a striped water buck. It must have been a peculiar type of water buck on some planet or another that, some planet, some place. You probably wouldn't have heard about it because the water bucks also had claws. They didn't have hoofs, they had claws. It was a very peculiar breed. And they had horned tigers. They had tigers there, and they ran around and had long horns. And they didn't have any stripes. Oh, I come to think about it, they had hoofs, and they went like this. See? And when they walked, they went like this, you know? That's right. And the water buck had long, straight tails that went like this. Yeah, I've got it straight now, I think. But I was a very peculiar kind of water buck, and all I could think of was killing water bucks. And that was my goal as a water buck. The PC will tell you this, wide-open-eyed, you know. That was my goal as a water buck, was to kill water bucks. I was a peculiar kind of water buck. I did nothing but kill water bucks. In the opposition terminal, a tiger, thirsty, all the time thirsty. The tiger's goal, you want the tiger's goal, tiger's goal, a tiger's goal. Well, that's very simple. The tiger's goal was to drink water. And the modifier is, and swim, if I can't, all the time. I think that must be it. Tiger's goal is to drink water and swim all the time. PC will look at you very bright-eyed, doesn't see anything wrong with this. Perfectly logical to him. And very often will tell the auditor, well, it makes sense to me anyway. And after you've run it for a little while, the PC has this terrific cognition. Terrific cognition. Of course, you didn't run it without straightening out the goals. You just sort of hung him with the goal straightened out. You said, well, now, just to test this, we will run the water buck with the goal to drink water and swim all the time. Now, just experimentally. PC will look at you, you know. All of a sudden you say, hey, auditor. Hey. Stop writing it all down there for a second. I got an idea. And I think that is the goal of the water buck. And, you know, I think the... I'm no dummy. I think the tiger's goal is to kill water buck. Not everybody could figure that out, see? Because I tell you frankly, there's nobody more stupid about his terminal package combinations than the PC. It just all seems to make sense, and nothing makes any sense, and this is a horrible confusion. Well, after a while, you're running it for a little while, and the PC will have this terrific cognition. You look up suddenly, bright-eyed. He'll say, you know, that's the tiger. Actually, they make very intelligent cognitions. As soon as they get this straightened out one way or the other, they will say, you know why a tiger has to have a tail? And then they give you the anatomy of tigers and why tigers have to have stripes and why tigers have to have tails and how you build tigers and why tigers are and the basic purpose of tigers and where the first tiger came from and so forth. And then they'll all of a sudden say, you know this? The water buck. Not the tiger. This is the tiger. Got it all straight now. Got it all straight now. Must be flat. Oh, it must be very flat. I think it's flat now. Pretty flat, isn't it? The auditor says, well, I think we better run this a while longer, if it's all right with you. We'll reassess it on the pre-half scale and so forth. Well, all right, if you say so. Pretty flat. About the third command, solution to the problem is roar. How would a tiger solve the problem? Well, a tiger would solve the problem by roaring. About that time, he says, "Hey, you know, this funny beige voice that I've always talked with, that was tiger's voice. That wasn't the water bug. It wasn't the water bug's voice. That wasn't the water buck's voice." "Oh, that's the water buck's voice. Tiger's voice, you know. Water buck's voice. Oh, yeah, well. No wonder I've never been able to talk." Because these things are just mishmashed one in against the other by solid context. Continuous. Now, you're aware of the old principle that when you fight something, you start partaking of its characteristics. You know? Want to be overwhelmed by something, resist the living daylights out of it. You really want to overwhelm somebody, why, just sit there and say, "Okay, now, everything I tell you about Scientology, just resist. Argue with me." Now, I don't believe in a man who will just sit there quietly, "Argue with me." I like an argument. Then tell him this, that, or the other thing, make him argue with each one of them. What do you think has happened to the poor psychologist? What's going to happen to the psychiatrist up the track someplace? There'll be an valence package called psychiatrist versus Scientologist. Except the two actually don't make a good package. I can say more about that in a moment. But I'm just giving you some kind of an idea. These things are in pairs. And so you get what is called the story. Routine 3D has the colloquial phraseology of having a package, which is to say what I showed you yesterday, which is the goal, opposition terminal, the modifier, and the terminal. And you have the terminal with modifier, using the modifier usually, not the goal, against the opposition terminal. And you get quite a roar between these two things and quite a squeal going back. And they're terrifically intermixed. So, but you have your intermixed package here toward the bottom. There'll be a package here, and that is this one into this one. See? Is your water buck and the tiger. And this gradually upgrades as you run it, but down through the millennia, the characteristics of the water buck have continued throughout all of the PC zone terminals, and the characteristics of the tiger have continued throughout all of his enemies. You know, you can always recognize each terminal. You can always recognize the opposition terminal. Once you know any one opposition terminal or any one terminal, you can always recognize these things. So you've got another package just above this, and it has the five elements in it. And these lower packages are appended to the upper package. Then you've got a bigger package, and you know, I showed you yesterday, these are just all fantastic numbers of problems solved one way or the other. And these are upgraded gradually, as you come up the line here. You've got packages, 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 see? Terrific numbers of these things. And each one of them is this way. When you first see them, however, there is no vector or direction in them at all. And some very clever fellow must have figured this out. I don't think anybody could have figured it out. Nobody human, certainly. Anyhow, I mean, I wasn't talking about me. Do you think I was talking about me? I'm not talking about me. I was talking about the fellow who dreamed it up originally. Now, you've got... These things are sort of dehydrated electronic standing waves that are totally drained out and completely black. And as you run the things, the PC can't see anything, he can't feel it, he can't hear anything, except it hurts like hell. And where the somatic is coming from and what's giving him the somatic, he hasn't a clue. You know? And if you're nice, you're used to a nice time track. You're used to a nice time track that goes on and on and on and on. Beautifully smooth time track. There's nothing to this time track at all. A beautiful time track, you know. Incident after incident, picture after picture. That was me going to school. That baby picture is me lying on a bearskin rug. And this is Aunt Hattie, the day of the picnic. You know, you're used to a nice, orderly time track like the old family album, you know. This was me when I used to be a rocket jockey. You know, except you really don't show them to anybody. You've stopped doing that. I think it's a custom that should be revived, you know. You're used to this kind of time track. Well, look, the time track is around the fringes of these things. This whole thing is a time track. And this whole thing is a time track. And here's a whole time track, and here's a whole time track, and here's a whole time track, here's a whole time track, and here's a whole time track, and here's one, and here's one, and here's one, and here's one. Of course, these things just keep going on upgrades, you see, bigger and bigger ones. Bigger and bigger. Each one of these things has got a complete time track. And all the time track is in a grouper. And you also got valences all over the sun, moon, and stars. You've got valences all over the place that sit outside the goals problem mass that have never troubled you in the least, that have a nice, beautiful, laid-out time track. You got one over here. Beautiful, laid-out time track. It isn't against anything, see? You run the peak there on the back track, and he runs down the time track, and he pick up these facsimiles, and you run them out. Oh, that's lovely, as long as you don't come near this mess. All of a sudden, one day, your foot slips, running a nice, smooth time track. This was me as a baby in cave days. This was me as a man. This is the marrying customs which were utilized in cave days. You know, clank. And here's a nice picture of Uncle Ben, that time of the famine when we had to practice cannibalism. We're not very proud of that one, so I have always had trouble running it. You're showing somebody off this way. You're looking them over, see? And look, watch now. Watch the trick. This is a 40-foot-high tiger, this one here, see? But it's all squashed, see? And we've been very, very careful. We never come near that one. And here is a picture of a small saber-toothed tiger. Wonder what's the matter with that corner of it. Wonder what's the matter with that. That corner of it doesn't seem to be quite right. Where's my beautiful time track? Ron took my time track away from me. he may drift out of this. Of course, he sooner or later would have run into the thing anyhow. That's for sure, he would have run into it. He has in the past. He'll run into it again. He'll fall into it and fall out of it. Now, what you do when you clear a man? When you clear somebody, 1961 type clear, what you do is key this thing out, and you set the fellow up with a consecutive time track. Here he is, a consecutive time track that is pretty nicely laid out up here someplace that isn't likely to key into that. And he's perfectly all right until someday, tomorrow, next week, next year, or in the next century, he all of a sudden says, "That's a funny-looking airplane." The left wing of it is all black. There he goes. He becomes very unhappy about the thing. That's key out, clearing by key out. Now, fortunately for us, this whole goals problem mass is hung together by no more than a few dozen pairs. And after that, it disintegrates. And these things straighten out and go together again. It is a fantastic accident that you get an exact balance in any game. It's a fantastic accident. It is almost unthinkably an accident. A person starts out and he's going to be a self-respecting priest. Now, he's been a priest before and he'll be a priest again, he thinks. But in this particular instance, he becomes a priest with the exact electronic output of the priest comes up against a type of problem and becomes a priest thoroughly and wholly, which, no pun intended, and is backed up against a valence opposite to it of exactly comparable magnitude. And he, every time he tries to solve this problem, chugs in to the other valence, and it reacts against him in almost exactly and equally the same amount of force. And when he does this often enough, he gets in this fight often enough, it's something like this. Let's say the United States and Russia went to war, and they kind of quit because nobody won. And then they went to war, and they kind of quit because nobody won. And they went to war, and they kind of quit because nobody won. And they went to war, and they quit because nobody won. And they went to war, and they quit because nobody won. The next thing you know, the air between here and Russia would be an awful mess. It would all be scrambled up. No, we'd have problems. And you'd start having Americans around who would, he'd have this, they couldn't quite understand this, but they couldn't drink anything but vodka. And they couldn't fight anything but Russians. And a Russian wasn't a Russian unless he had a portable radio. And you'd find out that their uniforms had flip-flopped. The American troops are wearing Russian uniforms, the Russians are wearing American uniforms. Always. Only this is flip-flopped again. Until eventually they're dressed exactly alike, and battles are very difficult because you can never tell who's friend and foe. I'm just trying to give you some wild example of a Gold's problem mass and its accumulation. Well, it has to be very, very accidental. It has to be very well balanced. It has to be terrifically, you know, there it is. And in auditing it, all you have to do is unbalance it. And when you unbalance it, this half is held in place by the volume and magnitude of this half. And this half is held in place by the volume and magnitude of that half. But all you have to do is unbalance either one and it starts going into shredded wheat. All you do is upset not the balance of nature, but the balance of beingness. And the problem starts ceasing to be a problem, because a problem is mass counter mass. Mass. If they're not exactly in balance, they don't stay well balanced on the whole track. Now, because some of these things stay in balance, other things that are not quite in balance can then hang up on one of these things that's totally in balance, and your Gold's problem mass starts accumulating. And it gets bigger and bigger, and it takes on it until at last, any time the person tries to be anything, he immediately will find an opposition terminal of some kind or another to oppose him, and this will hang up, and he never can solve any of his problems, and this is life. And this is the way he lives. This is the way everybody lives these days, as a matter of fact. You come up, you get your opposition, and that's fine. Your life, you live your life, and you got a problem. Life is a problem, and there it goes from there on out. And it all hangs up into the Gold's problem mass. And you got this heaviness and this headaches and things like this. And boy, it really takes something to accumulate a permanent somatic. That is really a trick. I congratulate a Thetan when he has accumulated a permanent mass, this particular character. I think it took some doing. It was well worth his effort, I'm sure, because it gave me such a hard time trying to figure out how to take it apart. I think that would be about the end product of it. It has no value. But these packages are now beautiful, I'm supposed to. As one package, if it stood isolated and alone, it might be quite useful. But as a matter of fact, because it's partaken of all the characteristics of its enemy, it never stands isolated and alone, is therefore never useful. Because the second one starts to dramatize it, one dramatizes the other side. The housewife, being a housewife, is a housewife right up to the moment until she meets her husband, and at that moment, a valence boss turns on. She never can quite understand exactly why this happened. When she's away from him, she feels perfectly all right. She's perfectly willing to be a housewife. And she runs into this guy and she says, do this, do that, slap and pop, you know. She actually feels like he's an employee. She keeps records and time schedules of his goings and comings. She even sort of says to him occasionally that he shouldn't put in too much overtime. This doesn't make any sense to him. Because he's being a police official with opposition terminal wife. One of my minor packages I ran into, it really made me laugh when I ran into this particular thing. The terminal is police official, but I've never been able to understand cops. Done a lot of police work, never proved of it. Terminal, police official. Yeah. That was just a minor package. And when I passed by that thing, I almost split a gut, you know? I often wonder, how did I answer up when I was given a parking ticket, you know? I must have answered up in a very feminine way. That was the op term, see? I must have treated every cop I ran into like a girl or something. You know, very confused. You can't quite figure out what you would have done or why you would have done. Unfortunately, it's never been put to the test because it's never been used. But that's just because it's all part of this mess. Interesting game, perhaps a marvelous game inside its own cell. Perhaps if you could play the game, if you could come anywhere near it, if it made any sense. Yeah, I can see me now in the Marcab Confederacy. Things have sort of gone to hell and all gone wrong, and I couldn't get a job and so forth, and I go down and get the job of chief of police or something of the sort, and then insist that everybody sweep the station house out very cleanly. Knew how to be a police official. Always fixing the staff spaghetti dinners. Remarkable. And of course, that's what you're supposed to do. And everybody knows that. And everybody does that. And that is the natural thing to do. There's a lot of guys right now driving cars that maybe have a valence of tank driver. And a tank driver, of course, always has an enemy tank driver. They find themselves in a vehicle which is moving forward. They see another vehicle moving forward. They know what to do. Crunch! And then, by golly, the police come around, you know, and they act like you shouldn't have done it. That's what is surprising, the complete unreasonability of the world around you. How completely unreasonable the world around you is. They don't understand. Stupid of them, but they don't. I can just see this police chief now, you know. The cops, they've been going along for years. They've just been, you know, throwing cigar butts on the floor and throwing old blackjacks on the floor and throwing other things on the floor and dropping their coats on the floor and hanging up everything in old closets, you know. There was a scrub bucket in City Hall once, but somebody lost it shortly after the building was built, you know. I can see their lockers with their slickers and boots and that sort of thing, you know, every kind of spilling out, you know. And the guns beautifully cleaned up and very handy and very ready, you know. Riot guns in racks, just as you pass out every door, you see, you could pick out a riot gun just like that. Tear gas bombs, everything all slicked up, you see. Then I take over, see. Well, see, the mere fact of being a police official with an opposition terminal wife would bring about this state of affairs. But every time you found you were a police official, why, a great many of your characteristics and behavior patterns would become those of a wife. Naturally, you can see how this game would get going. As a police official, you hang about 15 or 20 girls that have been murdering their husbands, and after that, you've had it, you see. So, all right, so you move into City Hall, and you say, well, that's it. And for a few days, you let this go. You don't bother with this very much. And then you sort of wake up one morning and you know something isn't right. You go down to City Hall and you look around. You look around very carefully and you can't quite lay your finger on what it is. And you sit down at your desk and then all of a sudden you know what it is. You know what it is. and you send a sergeant and so forth scattering on down the street to the local hardware store, and you get some scrub buckets, brother. You get some scrub buckets. And they come back up, and you get that floor scrubbed. You know how to do your job. You get some hangers around there, and you get some clothes brushes and so forth, and you get those coats and hats hung up. You get those hung up in the right places. And those old lockers and old closets and so forth all got men's things in them. So you just throw those in the garbage can and get them held away very quickly. It never occurs to you that the rain gear is going to be needed very shortly, but it's pretty messy, and it, after all, serves them right. And if we don't tell them about it, they'll never find out about it anyway. So that's the right way to run a police station. You think, well, everything is all right now, except it isn't quite all right. There's something still wrong in this police station. Begin to realize it looks like a den. It does. It begins to look like a study or a gun room or something of the sort. All these guns, you know, all along the line. Guns, you know, hand grenades and tear gas bombs. And... well, who'd want those in a parlor? Well, see, get lockers made down in the basement, see? Get the lockers made down in the basement, only they're made like benches, and there's chintz curtains hung up above them and back of them, you see? And you put all these nasty things in these boxes, you see, and you put all of these tear gas bombs, and that's when you put them away, and you lock that up pretty carefully. 3 days later, there's a riot. The police force is wiped out. You don't have to worry about the terminal anymore because you're not there. And what a relief that is. Afterwards, you get to wondering about this. You're sitting up on a cloud someplace, and you say, you know, if I just cleaned the place up a little better, it wouldn't have happened. The whole logic of it is totally eludes you. You just haven't a clue. You never find out what you did wrong. You're being audited someday. Ages afterwards, you're being audited one day, and you're sitting there in the chair, minding your own business, and the auditor, we hope, is minding your business. And he's got the meter. He's looking at the meter there. He said, what's that? What'd you just think of? I was thinking about police official. Oh, all right, we'll put that on the list. Police official, lawyer, judge, etc. He makes a long list of these things. Goes down the list, knows them all out. You sit there looking at police official. Well, you say, that's very interesting. Yeah, I can see how that would be. It seemed very important. Well, it isn't very important. It's a downgraded package, but let's get it anyhow here. And going on. All right, well, who or what would oppose a police official? Oh, a crook, a criminal, a blackmailer, the city hall, the mayor, the this, that. We make a nice long list of who or what would oppose a police official, you see. Ah, that's good. They finally nulled it all out. He didn't nulled it all out. He says, well, are there any more? He's saying, no, I don't think there are. He said, well, it's still ticking on the meter here. It's what's called bleeding the meter for additional terminals. Are there any more? You say, oh, well, if it comes to that, there could be a father, a mother. A woman of ill fame. I think that's all. All right, well, good. Are there any more? There's still a... action here on this Mark IV. It's still an action. Well, a wife, of course. Well, there's always a wife. Everybody knows that. Well, we put that down, and he nulls them all out carefully, and you find yourself sitting there with a wife, see? You look this over, whether you run it or not, and all of a sudden, Marcab Confederacy cleaning out the police station. Clean floors. Oh, no. That's why we lost that city. Now we know. Of course, you're the only one that knows. The other birds had their terminals and their reasons for losing the city. But all gets revealed, and it's such a relief because it's been a problem ever since. So the goals problem mass package itself introduces so many problems into life and action that it itself becomes a problem. And then everything you do and why you do it becomes a problem, and that is why it turns into this horrible mess. Because problems are just added to problems, added to problems, added to problems, till everything you do is a problem. You can't do anything without having an opposition term, without having it lock up on something. And you try to run these out as an engram or something of the sort, it doesn't run. Why doesn't it run? You have to run the whole goals problems mass before it's finally run out. But it discharges the other way. That's 3D in action. I have given you too simple a look on how to run it. I assure you that it can only be run with the greatest expertness of e-metering. But it can be run. Auditors can run it. They are capable of running it. They're capable of learning these skills when they study them hard. And PCs can live through it. Even I, so you, of course, could live through it. That would be much easier. But en route, you have your doubts as to whether you could live through it or not, and those doubts may or may not be well-founded, depending on how well your auditor is trained. Thank you.